A few years ago, I heard of this thing called a tough mudder. I had never really heard of it, and it sounded like my first hearing of that was like, well, that sounds like a weird name. What is that? So I saw on social media a bunch of pictures, and it was a bunch of kind of young, fit people doing crazy things, and just kind of Googled a little bit. The first event had been like the year before in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and it attracted about 4,500 participants, and I'm going to show you just a quick glimpse of what this is to give you a feel.
We came from all over the country for one reason only, to prove that you could do this, you could do anything you put your heart and your mind to. We are Tough Mudder!
Yeah, so I saw a video, and take a moment just to describe what this is, and I promise this is actually going to get to a point that matters to you. But a Tough Mudder is an endurance event. It was designed by a British counterterrorism officer. It is the ones that I did were 12 miles long, 26 obstacles. It was designed specifically to test mental and physical strength, and it plays on all common human fears by the use of fire, ice, water, electricity, confined dark spaces, and height. So, of course, I thought what any sane person does when they haven't been taking their Ritalin, I've got to do this. And, in fact, I suckered 9 others that hadn't been taking their Ritalin to do it with me. The obstacles, I'm not going to go through them, but there's 3 of my favorites. The first one is called the Arctic Enema. And this one actually involves, yeah, they got some creative names. This involves jumping into a giant container that's filled with about as much ice as water. And you have to jump in, and then you have to completely submerge in 33-degree water to get under barbed wire and boards to get to the other side. To say that the sensation is alarming would be an understatement. Then there's a couple of other special ones that involve electricity. The first one's called the Electric Eel. And the Electric Eel is where you belly crawl 75 feet under boards and barbed wire in mud and water. You're crawling under these dangling wires that every 2 to 3 seconds they charge with 10,000 volts. And I will say that I did forewarn my team members that I am not responsible for what comes out of my mouth when I get hit with 10,000 volts. So I'm former Navy, and so it just all comes back. So then the final obstacle is called electroshock therapy, which you don't crawl, but you run through, again, one of these little skinny yellow wires over muddy hay bales. And these wires charge on and off with enough electricity. Oh, I sent the wrong picture. I've got a picture of the one that we actually did. That guy actually right there is getting knocked out. There was a guy, I had a guy behind me. He was trying to pull out another guy, and he keeps getting shacked as he's trying to get his buddy out. It was hilarious. Now, at this point, you may think, okay, I'm not sure I'm ever coming back here or going to listen again because this guy's an idiot. And I understand that. In fact, for full disclosure, I've not just done one of them, I've done 3 of them. In fact, one of them I did with my son, but moving along, after crossing the finish line, and this was actually one of our guys, our drummer, a former New Lifer, he actually just left for Washington State to pursue an amazing young woman, and I will say it was a good choice. We miss him, but he did it with me 1 year. But for successfully suffering and crossing the finish line, They give you this beautiful orange headband that they put on your head, and they hand you a nice frothy ale, which I guarantee you, after what you've done for 3.5 hours, is the most beautiful thing you have ever consumed. And so, but on average, 25% of people that start do not finish. They do not cross the line. In fact, in the first two events I did, I lost a teammate in each of those events. In the first one, one dropped out, and the second one actually had to be taken away in an ambulance. So I will come back to that in a bit. But why am I telling you this? I'm telling you this because you and I are born into a world in which it's like we have been born into an endurance event. We didn't choose it. We didn't have any say in it. We didn't sign up for it, but it just happens that suddenly we are born. And then it becomes a daily and a weekly and sometimes just a monthly test of our mental and physical and spiritual strength, endurance, and abilities. We sense that somewhere in front of us is a finish line, but it feels like sometimes that the finish line keeps moving. Like I'm just about there, and then it moves a little bit further. And there's this striving, and there's this fight for a thing, for an experience, a goal, a prize. There's something that we sense in front of us. And it's, I would say, and I would argue, the thing that we are ultimately striving and fighting for in life from a very young age to arrive at is a deep and abiding sense of contentment and peace. That we would get to this point where we finally feel this, I've just got this deep, just, I'm content. I'm just at peace. That I'm just at total peace as a man, as a woman, as an adult, as a single person, as a married person, as a parent, just as a human being, that is what we are striving for. No matter what our age or your circumstances, and that never changes in this life. We're born, we come out howling because we go from this like wonderful, comfortable, warm, bouncy house environment where we're never hungry, and then now it's bright and it's cold, and they poke us and they label us and brand us and all these things and imprint us, and then we experience hunger, and we do the only thing that we know to do, we cry out because we have this need, and this is where it begins. It's now just a daily pursuit of contentment, a daily pursuit of peace, and it becomes a moving target. We may experience for a few moments, but then suddenly that moment comes to an end, whether it's a day or a week, a month or a year, it comes to an end, it doesn't last. So daily we begin striving towards this next thing in life. And we strive towards this next thing, and if it's this feeling like if I just conquer this next obstacle in front of me, and then we do it, we scale it, we overcome it, only to find that there's another obstacle ahead, or we round the corner and there's another obstacle. And we think, I just want to finally arrive at this place of contentment and peace. And we're born, and there's a striving to walk. And then sometimes, you know, we fall and it hurts, and we keep striving to master it. And then there's a striving to talk, and then striving to not allow our parents to potty train us. And then, you know, a parent striving to teach us to wipe our own butts and, you know, not hear, I'm done anymore. Striving towards this, you know, the ability to feed ourselves, you know, towards kindergarten. And the first day is so scary, mostly for moms. But we conquer it. And there's this striving to be able to dress ourselves in this moving forward into middle school and then making friends and fighting to live, you know, strive to live a life where I am actually zit free, and then finding our identity, maybe finding a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and then into high school and finding, just striving to find our identity and just to be comfortable in our own skin of who we are and what we look like. And then, you know, we get through adolescence, you know, we get through into high school, and it's striving, you know, look forward to when we can finally get that first car, and then striving to where I can finally let mom and dad drive without them in the car, and just moving forward. And the striving to then leave, you know, going towards college, going towards military, or striving in mom and dad's basement because I feel the need, to, you know, I feel the drive to strive, but I lack sense of direction, and I'm not, and I just feel defeated. And so for most, there's also this just striving to find a mate, somebody to do life with, the rest of our life with, but not all do. And those that don't, they typically continue to strive. And for many, it gets harder and more bitter the longer it takes. And then for those that do strive and find a mate, they strive towards their wedding day. And then after the honeymoon, they discover this thing that they never really dreamed of, is that is after every wedding comes a marriage. And then is striving in this marriage to have a good marriage and a happy marriage and maybe try and recapture some of those feelings that they had at the very beginning. And most couples procreate, and then there's a striving to deliver a healthy child and a striving to get this small human to sleep through the night and then walk and talk and not poop their pants and feed themselves in kindergarten. And there's this whole cycle begins with them. But then at the same time, now we're getting older and it's striving to move forward in a career and a marriage and friendships and hobbies and social media and maintaining an image. And for many, striving to find peace with God or striving to find peace without God. But it's striving for peace. To understand if there is a God, are He and I cool? How do I live in such a way that He and I are copacetic? And for many, they find themselves, an obstacle comes out of the blue that they did not expect. And it's striving to overcome a job loss or a layoff or a bad breakup or a divorce. And then in middle age, for many, it's like adolescence all over again. It's trying to strive to figure out, well, who am I? Because all the hopes and dreams and plans that you had for your life didn't exactly come through the way you hoped and dreamed and planned. And it's like you look in the mirror and age and gravity are beginning to have an effect. And it's like, okay, where do things go from here? What does the second half of life look like? And then we come to realize that we're entering into that final quarter of this endurance event called life. It was, we approach this thing we called old age at an alarmingly rapid rate of speed, moving towards this final quarter of life and either retirement or a greeter at Walmart, or what's it going to look like, and you know, to where this race is just finally finished. Don't you feel better? Aren't you glad you came this morning? So here's my point. You don't have to be religious, believe in God, to understand and relate what I'm describing to you. You know what this feels like. You know firsthand what it feels like that somehow you got involuntarily entered into an endurance race, an endurance event, and you're striving towards something. There's something in you hardwired to progress, to get to that next thing. But more than just progress, you want to win. You want to win at life. It's something we all share in common. You want to win, whatever that looks like. You want to successfully face and deal with and overcome whatever challenge and obstacle life may put in your path and strive towards that thing of contentment and peace. Maybe that's why we refer to it not as the human nap, but the human race. So you want to win as adults. You want to win as a single person. You want to win as a married person. You want to win as a parent. You want to win as a follower of Jesus. For those of you that would say you are a follower of Jesus, you want to win as a Christian. But at times, there's certain challenges, certain obstacles that we will face at different stages in life and in relationships or just life as a whole, and it can feel difficult and isolating and frustrating and overwhelming and at times defeating. And sometimes we're not sure exactly what it looks like to win. But we all have those moments, these life stages or these relationships that we're pretty sure whatever winning is, we're not doing it. Or at best, I'm getting like a C. So we're launching this series today called I Don't Wanna. Because as challenging, as terrifying, as a tough mutter might sound, it is nothing compared to real life. Because the average lifespan in America is about 79 years. And so at times it can feel like a 79-year endurance course. But the big question is, how do I win? What does success look like? How do I get there? What does it look like to successfully conquer the challenges and obstacles that are going to come my way in this life? And while we're at it, what are the parameters? What are the rules? What direction do I go? Sometimes life can feel like we just showed up with a group of other people and then somebody stood up with a starter pistol and said, all right, ready, set, go, bang. It's like, hold on, what? Where's the starting line? Where's the finish line? How long do I have to run? Where are the boundaries? Where's the track? Where's the direction? Where's the finish line? Did we just start running and we hope we're running in the right direction? We hope we are running in what is actually forward, and we can face challenge after challenge after challenge, and we can spend our whole lives striving, hoping we're heading in the right direction, hoping we're doing it right, hoping that we are prepared for what comes next and what lay ahead, that we have what it takes to finish, that we have what it takes to win, and whatever winning looks like. And then you add to that, to the stress and anxiety of it, that so often we can feel like we are so alone. There is so often we are facing things and we feel like we somehow convince ourselves, I am the only one that struggles with this. Nobody else I know is struggling with what I struggle with.
We're often too embarrassed or too afraid to talk about it openly and honestly, so we end up choosing to run our race and fight and strive alone. And for tragically for some, the striving becomes too much. The sense of isolation becomes too much, and they call it quits permanently. And with the pull of a trigger, the slice of a knife, the dangle of a noose, the swallow of pills, a leap, they launch an enduring tsunami of pain in the lives of those that they leave behind. But the good news is, and the reason that we are doing this series is because it does not have to be that way. It does not have to be your story or somebody that you love. The good news is we don't have to guess. The good news is we don't have to wonder. We don't have to simply figure things out the hard way. And maybe the best news is that we get to understand that I am not alone, that you are not alone in anything you face or anything you struggle with, and we don't have to do it alone. In this age of filtered images that we create on social media to create this image of life to this world, you know, again, it feeds into this illusion that the people around us aren't dealing with and facing what we face, and that's just simply not true. It is just that, an illusion. And so over the next few weeks, and this is why we're not just doing this series, but we created this place, New Life Wichita. People that would just kind of bet the farm, went on a limb, and the start is to create a place, a Jesus community where nobody has to pretend. Nobody has to filter their life and make it look better than what it really is. So over the next few weeks, we're going to learn from others that have run this race, and besides some personal stories, we're going to look at some key passages and key individuals in scriptures to find the answers. Now, I know for some of you, you may be skeptical about the Bible. Maybe it's been a long time since you ever really read it. Maybe you've never really read it. For some of you, you may have thought that the Bible is just, it's kind of mostly myth and fables and fairy tales and the 613 ways that we disappoint God. But the Bible is a collection of 66 different letters written by over 40 different authors over 1,500 years in three different languages on three different continents, all telling one story, our story. And it is a story of hope. It's a story of redemption. Over the next few weeks, we're going to learn about the race that is marked out for us. The race is marked out before us, and what it looks like to fight well, to determine true north. What does it look like to press forward and to win? And the core passage, the foundational passage for this entire series is in a book called the Book of Hebrews. It's foundational to the series, and it's in Hebrews 12. And if you've not been a Bible reader, it's been a long time, this would be a great place to start, because again, this is the foundation of this whole series. If you're new to the Bible, a good place to start. And to give context to Hebrews 12 is Hebrews 11. And Hebrews 11 is basically, it's a list. It's a pedigree of men and women that came before, men and women who ran their race. And sometimes they stumbled, they didn't do it well. Sometimes it cost them greatly. For some, it cost them their lives. There were times that they wanted to give up, but ultimately they made it. And it's just a glimpse of their stories. The author shares glimpses of their stories as they blaze the trail for those of us that would come after. And what they faced and what they did to overcome what they faced. And then in verse 1 of chapter 12, the author writes, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses." In other words, those that went before us, the men and the women who trusted God, even though it scared them, it confused them, they didn't understand, it cost them at times, but they are now on the other side of the finish line. Now they're on the other side, now they're watching, and they are calling out, and they are cheering those of us that are coming. They are watching, and they are anticipating those that are coming behind us. And the author encourages us, in light of them, let us throw off everything that hinders. Let's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And you know what's amazing? That in 2017, this passage that was written nearly 2,000 years ago couldn't be more relevant. Here's what I mean. See, I'm curious, how many of you as a student or as an adult have participated in one form or another of a race? You had to run a race. Okay, all right, so several of you. The others of you, it's like just the thought of it, like you just want to take a nap. And I get that. In fact, the guy got me into running, this guy has actually run from L.A. to New York. Like his first thing, he said, "Chad, your first goal is just to hate running less." I'm like, no, that's just not possible. The thing is, you imagine you're going to run a race. What are you going to do on race day? You're going to make things as light as possible. You just want to be super light. It's just you're gonna wear like the lightest clothes, minimal clothes. You're gonna try and get the lightest shoes. You know, good cushion. You're not gonna strap on. You know, you're gonna throw off everything that hinders. You're gonna strap on heavy boots. You know, and put a backpack of rocks and a 40-pound sandbag on your shoulders and carry 2 bowling balls. I mean, that's just ludicrous to think of. If you're military, you do that. But for normal people, you don't. But what you're gonna do is you're gonna make yourself as light as possible. You're going to run as light as you can. And the reason why this is so relevant in 2017 is because we are so loaded down. We're just so loaded down. I mean, aren't there mornings that you wake up from a full night's sleep and you still feel tired? Just like still feel exhausted? I mean, there's mornings that you're just as tired as you went to bed. We've so loaded ourselves up with debt. We've so overloaded our schedules. We're so busy trying to impress other people. We're so overcommitted. And then there's the digital weight that we carry with us. We're always tethered and tied and connected to and logged on to the entire world. Nearly every waking moment we are on. In fact, I contacted a friend of mine. Where'd it go? Some of you will know what this little device is. What is that? It's a pager. Yes, you are over 40. So... I actually remember back in the day when like the pagers were the thing, and I actually refused to carry one for a while. Like I was in a role like, no, I'm not going to do that because I thought, what a nightmare. Like I'll never be off. People being able to reach me at any point, you know, on 24/7, you know, and then now I carry this. And so do most of you, which is like 10 times worse. It's like 10 times worse because it's like never off. Somebody can call us, and if they don't call us, and even if we got on silent, we've got text messenger, we've got messenger, we've got Facebook, we've got Twitter, we've got Instagram, we've got Snapchat, we've got live, we've got screens in front of us all the time with not only this, but then when we turn that off, we got to get the other screens on because we've got all these shows that we DVR'd and there's Netflix and we need to binge watch and all this. And then along with that, we load ourselves up with all of these material things and gear and stuff, and we're just so happy because I got 0% interest for 1,000 payments, and you know I've got credit card debt and no margin, and we just live check to check, and then we wonder why we're so tired. We wonder why we lack the emotional energy to truly engage in authentic relationships with the people around us, even family sometimes. Meaningful relationships with those around us, let alone God. Because you know what's left over? The leftovers. And that's it. And we're running, we're striving, we're so distracted, we're so loaded down. And the writer says, listen, throw it off. As a theologian, Taylor Swift says, shake it off. The writer says, throw it off. And the other thing he says, throw off all these things that weigh you down, and then throw off the sin that so easily entangles. And he's talking about the exact thing that we just dealt with in our last series, Avoiding Regret. He's talking about those things that we do that end up sabotaging and derailing us and people that we care about. And just as a recap, when we seek to meet legitimate needs in illegitimate ways, when we try to use God to accomplish our own ends, and when we seek to do the right thing the wrong way at the wrong time, and we try to take shortcuts. And in the end, when we do that, when we miss the mark, the literal definition of sin, when we sin, in the end, we become entangled in the consequences of those things. And we complicate our lives because we cannot sin without hurting our future, our family, and our faith, as we talked about in our last series. So the author says, throw off all these things. Throw off all these things that weigh you down. Avoid doing things that entangle you and hold you back. Instead, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Because we all know we're in a race no matter what. And we didn't choose it, we didn't pick it. It's like there's something marked out for us, and it is. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Because for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Scorning its shame, he ended up sitting down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And I wish I had, this text is so rich, I wish I had the time to unpack it, but I don't. But at its basics, the author identifies that we are in fact in a race, one way or another. It will be filled with obstacles and tests, but the race that is marked out for us is marked out by God himself. And it will not be easy. And it will test us. But there is one who went before us. He was the pioneer. He is the perfecter. And from the one who from beginning to end trusted God in the middle of his race and to play the race by God's rules, to do it his way. And everything got thrown at him. But with every test and trial and barrier and obstacle, he endured. He never gave up. And he did it in such a way that he becomes our chief example of how to run in such a way to win the prize. And at times, as a young adult, as an adult, as a single or a married person or a parent in this life, there will be struggle and testing and pain involved. But there is a purpose. And to word it this way, that we actually have within our power to make a choice. We get to pick our pain. We can pick the pain of discipline, or we can pick the pain of regret. See, the pain of discipline reaps a reward. The pain of regret is the pain of what might have been. And as a result, the writer says later, discipline never seems pleasant at the time, but painful. But later on, it produces a harvest of righteousness, and here's our word, peace, for those who have been trained by it. See, isn't that what every single one of us is striving towards? That feeling of peace, that we would striving in this life and the next to have peace, to win at life, that we would live a daily existence where to the core of our soul, we just feel peace, peace with ourselves, with our circumstances, peace with our family and friends and those that are closest to us, co-workers, that we would feel peace in our finances, that we would feel peace in our love life, we would feel peace in our lack of a love life, that we would feel peace. And so, as I begin to just kind of land the plane this morning, to kind of prepare us for the next few weeks, if you are actually going to benefit from this series, actually experience life change, and begin taking steps towards winning, moving towards the peace we all long for, you're going to have to decide up front. And again, this, for some of you, you're not, you'd say, I'm still skeptical about Jesus, God, and Bible, all that. This isn't just for you. This is going to be for some of you that you've been a follower of Jesus for decades, but you've had a pattern of doing things. And what you're going to have to decide up front is, I'm not going to keep the walls down, or I'm going to keep the walls down. I'm not going to presume on my ignorance, and I'm also going to presume on all the years that I've been in church and Bible study and all that. I'm going to keep the walls down. You're going to have to decide up front that you're going to have an open mind to look at things a little differently, to do some things a little differently. As a smart man once said, is that you are perfectly designed to achieve the results you are currently getting. And if there's some results and things in your life that you aren't liking, then what that means is you're going to have to change some things. If you're going to be able to run the race laid before you and do it well. James, a half-brother of Jesus, writes this, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds." It's like, what? No, why would I do that? It's because you know the testing of your faith, it produces perseverance. That this is training. This is equipping. This is empowering you. It's building your spiritual and mental and relational strength for bigger challenges that lie ahead. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete. And then he uses a different variation of what we're talking about, not lacking anything. You're like, I don't lack anything. I have what I need. I feel peace. But there are going to be times you're going to want to quit and give up. And that's what we're going to talk about over the next few weeks. But here's the part that's going to be the most challenging for most of you in the weeks to come. James writes this, "If any of you lacks wisdom," and we all lack wisdom, we all have things going on in our life or things that we're going to face. It's like, okay, God, how do I handle this? How do I get through this? How do I do this right? We all lack wisdom. You should ask God. And he gives generously to all without finding fault. And it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt. Because the one that doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That person shouldn't expect to receive anything from the Lord because such a person is double-minded and they're unstable in all they do. What do you think James means by that? See, I think for a long time, I thought James was like saying like, okay, I got to squint my eyes and pray really, really hard and like really, you know, I believe, you know, and if I tense up really hard, I believe God, It isn't that you have to pray something exactly just the right word and get it just the right lingo and all that. He's not saying that if you don't pray right, well, then you're not going to hear anything or get anything from God. That's not what he's saying, because he says, if you lack wisdom, just ask God. Just ask God. He gives generously without finding fault, and it's going to be given to you. What he's saying is this, that you have to decide, and it's irreducible minimum, you have to decide up front, he's God, I'm not. He's God, I'm not, and I will accept his answer. That's what he means. So when you pray and you ask for the answer, God, I'm struggling with this. God, what should I do? And then God gives an answer, and we take a second and go, well, that's not really what I had in mind. Got something else? And God's like, oh, no, this isn't multiple choice. Like, this is the way. But I don't like that, God. I want a different answer. And so if that's your answer, then I'm going to have to take matters into my own hands. We treat God as kind of like, if you, not throw the girls under the bus, but, your girlfriend or your wife, they say, I'm hungry. Pick a place to eat. That's like a death sentence, right? And you're like, okay, how about Jose Peppers? No. I'm not feeling that. Okay, well, I'm hungry for Longhorn. Well, no, I'm not. I'm not hungry. And then it devolves into World War III and you want to get a divorce. But James's point is that, listen, God is so great. God is so able. God is so willing to generously give you the answers that you seek. And that's what we're going to be looking at over the next few weeks. But that when he gives you the answer, that you accept his answer. You must believe his answer. And even though it's not your answer, it's not the path that you would choose, it's his way. And that his plan is trustworthy and lead you to where you ultimately want to be, to make sure that you win at this life and the next, to lead you to life that is truly life. Otherwise, as James says, you'll just continue as you always have. That's what he means when he says, otherwise you're just going to be like a wave of the sea, kind of tossed and blown by the winds of your emotion and how you feel in that particular moment, or the most recent self-help blog or book that you're reading. But if you want to get on the right course, know that there will be struggles even on the right course. See, don't ever convince yourself, well, because I'm facing struggles, then I must not be on the right course. That's not how it works. There's going to be obstacles that will cost you. They will test your resolve and your trust. But if you stay the course, in the end, you will cross the line. And what lies on the other side of struggle is reward that won't make you forget the struggle, but it will make you thankful for the struggle. Because you'll see what it did in you and how it shaped you and made you stronger and more able and capable. And if you remember, I told you I lost two teammates in two different tough mudders. Like, not lost, they found them. But again, 25% that start don't finish successfully. The event I did in Missouri, I had one team member that made it about 3 miles, and then she dropped out. Now, she had signed up about 10 months before. She had invested a few $100s in registration, in travel, in hotel costs, and other expenses. She drove 450 miles to be at the event. So what went wrong? Well, for starters, I didn't find this out literally till the night before we were to run. She had just quit chain smoking 3 months before. She had never run a full mile in her life. She was about 70 pounds overweight the day she signed up, as she was the day she arrived. And so, based on that little bit of information, you're probably not shocked that she was not able to complete it. See, she rejected the pain of discipline and ended up with the pain of regret. On the second event, we had a completely different group. We were about 5 miles in, and one of our teammates was not paying close attention. He had gotten away from the team and came to a concrete barrier, and he ended up planting in his hand as he ended up going over. He slipped on the concrete barrier. He fell. He hit his head on the concrete. It knocked him out. He fell the rest of the way to the ground because he was unconscious, landed on his hand, broke his finger off to the side, and so now he's laying there. In blood and a finger going sideways. This is a great recruiting talk, right? So his head's bleeding, he's unconscious, his finger's jacked, but fortunately for him, the team that we had just helped through the previous obstacle was a group of EMTs, nurses, and surgeons. So it's like they hopped to action, they're stabilizing his head, and the one doctor's like, can you feel your hand? Like, no, I'm going to fix this. straightened his finger. It was like pretty awesome. And I, now it's a moment of confession. The evil part of me was like, dude, this is totally messing with our time. I just, don't judge me. A little competitive. So, but it ended up that they got the EMTs out there and the emergency. They got him loaded in an ambulance and they took him away. And about an hour and a half later, the rest of us ended up crossing the finish line. We were muddy and cramped and bruised and scraped up and banged and bleeding just a little bit. But we had big old smiles on our faces because we had done it. And they ended up getting the great orange headband, put the orange headband on you. Of course, I'm a little OCD. I'm like, no, I'm muddy. Don't put that clean thing. But they put that on, and we had all this pain and this exhaustion, but we had the thrill that we had done it and that we did it together, that we had pushed our minds and bodies to the limit, that we had fixed our eyes on the prize, that together we crossed the line when hundreds of others did not. And together we had pushed and pulled and encouraged and lifted and literally at times carried one another until together we crossed the line and we picked the pain of discipline over the pain of regret. And in the end, we celebrated. See, for the one girl 10 months before, I'd told the whole team and given them directions on what they needed to do to prepare and discipline for us to be able to cross the finish. I gave them instructions about like running and pull-ups and push-ups and eating actually and core exercises and building endurance and upper body strength and all of these things. And in the end, I was crystal clear, but essentially the response was, thanks, but no thanks. I'll do this my way. And at great cost of time, money, and embarrassment because of the ignoring of counsel and direction, unable to finish the race. The other race in which one of the guys on our team needed to stay focused. He needed to pay extra attention to the threat that each obstacle places. He needed to stay with the team as we helped and watch out for one another. But he took his eye off. He got lax. And in the result, it was a concussion and stitches and a broken finger. And ultimately resulted in him not being able to finish the race. And see, if you're older than 10, and we all are in here, then you know this life is filled with tests and trials and challenges. And the older we get, they just get bigger and bigger and harder. As an adult, as a single man, a single woman, a spouse, a partner, just life as a whole. And if we're not prepared and equipped and we're not choosing the pain of discipline, it can cause us to want to give up and drop out and say, I'm done, I don't wanna anymore. Or it can cause us to get focused on the wrong things because we overload ourselves with stuff and we get distracted and from what's important for what's average or good or even not good. We get entangled as a result of poor choices and then we face this embarrassment to let other people in. And it's so easy to take our eyes off of the one who led the charge, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith that we're going to talk about. And so we stumble and we fall. And I'm going to close with this. As important as it is for each of you to be here each week, and for the people that you're going to invite and come, that's why we put the Join Me at New Life cards on your seats. Those are golden tickets. There's somebody in your life that needs to hear one, if not all, of these messages. And just by inviting them, you could change their life. As important as it is for you to be here, for them to be here, I just want to tell you, if ever there was a time to experiment with a small group, it's now. A small group is basically a group of individuals that gets together on a weekly basis and does life together. A passage written by one of the wisest men that ever lived says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up, but pity anyone who falls down and has nobody to pick them up. And we all stumble and fall at one point or another. And so over the next few weeks, we're going to be raw. We're going to be authentic. There's no pretending as we deal with six key seasons and stages and relationships in life that test us to the point, I don't want to do this anymore. But again, the key to you actually having success is to not continue to do life alone and to stop pretending and stop hiding. We know you're a mess. We know you've got issues. We know you've got secrets because we do too. But man, when we got people in our life, because you know one of the things that I love about the Tough Mudder is it's not an individual sport. You do it as a group. And other events like that, like the Gauntlet, I like doing that and other things, because it's about we get each other as a team across the finish line, however long it takes us. You're not going to go as the fastest runner. You're going to go on whichever one finds the biggest challenges. And one of the things that I love is under Tough Mudder, what's that word, if you can see it? Finisher. Finisher. And see, what I so desperately want for you, what your Heavenly Father, which you may struggle to believe, you've got a Heavenly Father that loves you, what He wants so desperately for you is for you to be able to finish well. For you to succeed, for you to run your race with perseverance and courage and confidence and to fight in such a way that you win. Because if you win, the people that you care about the most, they win. And if you win and they win, this city wins. This world wins. The people you care about. Because you will run your race with wisdom and understanding and perseverance side by side with others alongside with you. To the very end. Let's pray. Father, I'm so thankful that we know that we're able to have a glimpse of what Jesus went through, what He faced, the struggles, and that He goes before us, and that He is living proof that doing it Your way, as scary and challenging and overwhelming as it might feel, that on the other side of it is life. So I pray for all of us in this room. I pray for all those that are listening online. I pray, God, that You would give everyone the courage to take a step in the community, but to at least be here and engage. And I pray that You begin to help them find healing and hope and restoration and new life. I thank You for Your incredible grace and Your mercy and Your patience with us as we navigate this life. I thank You that You provide answers and You provide strength and hope for the things that we are facing or will face that will try to take us out. So I pray for something amazing to happen in the lives of the people who are here this morning, as we engage in the next few weeks, and those that are going to come. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.